All right, this is episode 6 already. Boy, we got Lee Jacobson. I think you're really going to like this one. He started a group on Facebook called Washington Hikers and Climbers. He loves his group, loves all the people in there. Don't forget to go back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Find episode 6 there and follow along in the show notes. There's also some great pictures of Lee there. And as always, there's links to gear and books we talk about in the show. If you click through there, it gives me a little kickback. I appreciate it. Thanks for supporting the show. This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Lee Jacobson, and I live in Seattle.
Okay, well, obviously, I know you from the amazingly large hiking group on Facebook called Washington Hikers and Climbers. Is that you?
I am the creator. Yes, I'm the Kirk.
So what sparked all that?
Well, it's purely by accident. you know, I wasn't even on Facebook until probably 4 years ago. I was always social media averse and really had no interest in any of that. My son kept telling me, I got to get on Facebook. I got to get on Facebook. And eventually I relented. And of course, he regretted that as soon as I did. you know, I used my Facebook page to primarily to store my hiking pictures. This was before I got on Dropbox and just wanted a, you know, a place in the cloud where my pictures could be stored. And so I started downloading a lot of hiking pictures onto my page and found I kind of enjoyed that and started posting a bit. And before you know it, I was a full-fledged Facebooker. And as I explored around a little bit, I came into contact with a group of Croatian hikers through a Croatian hiking page on Facebook. And then a little later, a worldwide hiking page on Facebook. And kind of liked what I saw and the idea of that. And one day I thought, well, it might be fun to have something like that here in Washington, just for Washington hikers. So I contacted a friend of mine, Michael Restivo, and told him I was interested in starting a small little group page, and would he be my first member? And he agreed. And so, you know, I got it up and running, and the whole idea was just to have maybe 30 or 40 of my friends on the page and force them to look at my hiking pictures.
Right.
Made it a public group, added a few friends, and, you know, just plugged along for a few days. And then we started getting people joining who I didn't know. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but we welcomed them to the group and it just kept going. And probably about the time it hit 100 members, I figured I was onto something. And We're at about 19,500 members right now, and it's growing at maybe 1,500 a month. So,
wow.
Yeah, I call it it's an example of the blind squirrel finding the nut, and that's the best way to describe it. It's really taken off. A lot of new friendships being made. A lot of people hiking with people they didn't know a year or two ago, and 98% of the time, it's a lot of fun. And like anything else on the internet, about 2% of the time it gets out of hand, and but we deal with it the best we can. And overall, it's a real positive group. And I know a lot of people have gotten inspired by looking at the pictures from all the hikers, and turned out to be a great thing.
Yeah, I'd say so. I really enjoy it. I see so much on there that makes me think, man, I want to go on that one. I can't believe I've never even been there. It's right there.
Yeah. It's, I know a lot of my best friends these days are people I met through that page. And it's something bigger than the page itself. It's a community of people. I think what really drives it is the fact that everybody on there shares a passion. And, so it's real easy to make connections and have fun.
That's good. Well, you and your crew do a really good job of keeping it as clean as possible. And I think you guys do great.
Well, thank you. It's, I was going to say it's a thankless task, but you just scuttled that.
Yeah, I see people thanking you all the time.
But yeah.
I help run a 49,000 page, 49,000 member page, and it's not easy to control all those comments.
Yeah. And we have three administrators now, and we all have lives, and it's, I've tried to keep a hands-off approach just because we don't have time to monitor everything on the page, but that doesn't suit everybody well. And, we've got a very diverse crowd on there, Western Washington people, Eastern Washington people, liberals, conservatives, and, so it's not hard for them to, for somebody to push somebody's button. And I'm still trying to keep a hands-off approach to it. Just not getting paid enough to look at it 24 hours
right.
a day.
I understand completely. That's cool. It's been really fun. And did you ever get into any like groups before this? Was there like the WTA type stuff, or what's the other big one? The Northwest Hikers,
.net. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you on that?
Not really. After I'd been on Facebook for about a year, I took another step and got on Twitter. The impetus behind that was just to get the daily grooming reports at the Cabin Creek Snow Park.
That's the only reason. I
swore, even though I was on Facebook, I would never get on Twitter. But then one day when I was trying to find out if the park was being groomed, I saw a little notice that said, follow us on Twitter. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good use of that social media. So I signed up for Twitter, and Twitter suggests people that you should be following. And as it sort of figured out that I was interested in the outdoors, it started suggesting people. I think the first person I ever followed was some hiker in Germany. And and fell into a group of hikers in Cumbria, I believe it's called, in the United Kingdom, and kind of opened my eyes to how people loved hiking all around the world. And this was a place I'd never even heard of. And So enjoyed that, and eventually started meeting hikers from around the United States, and sort of fell into a hiking group spurred on by a chat that was going on Twitter called Hiker Chat, hashtag Hiker Chat, and I would participate in that weekly chat on Twitter, and you know, became more savvy with social media and began to see what was out there. I think the first group on Facebook I fell into was the Croatian hiking group. And that was just happenstance. I had posted a picture of mine on some page that was asking for hiking pictures. It wasn't even a hiking group. It was like the Smithsonian Institute or something like that, National Geographic, and posted a couple pictures. And maybe a month later, I saw that somebody had liked one of them. And so I went to see who it was. And it was a woman in Europe. I wasn't sure what country at the time. And took a look at her Facebook page, and she had all these hiking pictures up, and I'd never thought about hiking in Croatia. It was another eye-opening experience, and I wrote her a message on Facebook, and you know, just said thanks for liking my picture, and looks like you have a lot of great hiking in Croatia, and we sort of struck up a friendship. And maybe a month or two later, I got invited to join a Croatian hiking page, Planinarski Kutak, and joined that. And that was my first experience with a group page on Facebook. And kind of liked the way that operated. And, you know, I could tell it was a pretty cool community. And that led me to the hiking page on Facebook, worldwide Facebook group, and that's where it kind of started.
Yeah, you started learning stuff and realized how easy it could be, right?
Yeah, I was always a follower of WTA, and their trip reports were invaluable to me, and and I'm a member of the group now, but. That kind of all followed the facts. So
nice. Yeah, I tell you, there was a point in time when that was really all there was with those WTA trip reports for me.
Yeah, and they were crucial. I spent a lot of time every week combing through those reports. And I don't think our hiking page is really a substitute for it. I still recommend people go to WTA. You know, our group does allow for instant communication between people. That's one advantage we have. But I think when it comes to detail and information, the WTA page is still the way to go.
Well, and trying to find a certain hike right away, because on the group, it's really hard to like find a hike that somebody's talking about. It they just kind of pop up, so it's kind of hard to search that.
Yeah, there is a search box on the page, and if you do plug in the name of the hike, you will get you know, you'll pull up all the reports on the page or photos from people who tagged that hike in their picture. But if they didn't, you know, tag the name specifically, or they didn't write it in their post, you won't get it. So it's a little more happenstance.
Well, that's handy to know, though. And that works pretty good.
I've used that a number of times when I'm usually when someone writes me and says, hey, do you know anything about such and such a hike, what it's like there now? And I don't, you know? So I'll plug the hike into the search box, and then I'll write the person back and I'll say, well, John Doe wrote about it a couple of days ago, and this is what he said. So.
Well, that's great, man. Do you have anything to say to your Washington hikers and climbers folks out there?
Just that I love you all.
Well, I think I had quite a few of them listen to prior podcast, Hadley Can Hike.
Yeah, no, I know it's been a life-changing event for a lot of us. We have socials every few months, and a lot of new friendships have developed. And some of the people I used to hike with they complain to me that I'm not hiking with them anymore. And, you know, you spend too much time on that page. That's the way it goes. Things change, and try and keep the old and get on with the new too.
That's right. Well, and that's good. But have you, I got a good question for you here. Have you been recognized on the trail by anybody you don't know?
Well, actually I would say, and I'm not bragging about this, but, because I'm not entirely comfortable with it, but there are probably fewer hikes I go on where I don't get recognized by somebody than hikes where I do. It's become a pretty common occurrence, and, it's flattering. But it's not something I'm used to, and it's not always in tune with the whole notion of solitude out there. But it's been fun every time. I'm always glad to run into people. A lot of times they'll come up to me and say, "Oh, you're Lee Jacobson from the Facebook group," and I'll say, "Yeah, who are you?" And they'll say, "Oh, I'm Sarah," and I always have to say, can you give me a last name? Because there's about 120 Sarahs on our group page, and I don't know anybody by their first name, except my best friends. I know pretty much everybody by their last name. And I think the first person to ever run into me on the trail and stop me was... his name is Mushtaq Salat. I bumped into him probably three or four times after that. But it's not uncommon. I was up at Ingalls Lake last year and got stopped three or four times on the trail.
One of my interviews that I did was with Karin Gaffney, and she runs the Seattle group for Hike It Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about that in her episode about running into you on the trail. And she was kind of nervous, actually. And she said that you actually took a picture of her with all the, because there was all kinds of baby, all the girls, ladies have babies on their backs. And
oh, yeah. That was the Mason Lake Trail. I remember that.
I'm going to pop that in.
It's funny. I ran into Lee. I actually got a chance to meet him. I don't know.
Oh, if cool. Met. No.
I ran into him on a hike, a baby hike out at Talipas in Olali Lakes.
Oh, wow.
And, I recognized him. And, of course, there's, a million people in his Facebook group. And I was like, "Are you Lee?" And he's like, "Yeah."
Oh, that's funny.
"Whoa, you must feel so famous." I was like, "You don't know me, but I am in your group." And, and then he was like, "Can I take your picture?" He has to take my picture because we were all with babies.
Oh, that's funny. Did he post it on Washington Hikers and Climbers?
He did.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
No, that's cool. I remember that morning very well.
Oh, good. All right. Well, hey, Let's pop into some of these hiking questions. What got you into hiking?
Well, I got into hiking with a purpose. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I was actually born in Alaska, but raised here in Washington. I never hiked as a kid. My family took us out camping every now and then, and I was used to being in the outdoors, but mostly I rode my bike as a young teenager, and then an old teenager. We would take these long bike trips in a manner that's kind of unthinkable these days. I remember as a 14-year-old telling my mom I was gonna get on the bike with a and another friend of mine and I were going to pedal up to Paradise. This was when I was living in Tacoma.
Wow.
And it was going to take a few days, and we tied sleeping bags onto the back of our bikes. We didn't have racks or anything, and threw some raw hamburger meat in some tin foil and tied that onto the back of the bike. That was our food. And, you know, when I think back at this, it just, everything was wrong. You know, we're riding in the midday sun with this raw hamburger meat slowly baking in the tin foil in the back of the back of the bike. And I think first night we made it out to, it must have been Alder Lake or something. And we just pulled off to the side of the road and threw our sleeping bags in the grass and went to sleep. And the next morning rode up to Paradise, probably walked our bikes a good way of that stretch, and turned around and then zoomed back down the road. I had a little speedometer on my bike. I remember going about 40 miles an hour. Wow. Down the road from Paradise, no helmet on, of course, no helmets. Yeah. By the way, you know, people listening don't know, but I'm an old man, so I'm talking ancient history here. And, you know, when I think back at that, just a little slip on the bike and I probably wouldn't have been here today. You know, and the notion that our parents let us do something like that as 14-year-olds is, it's just not something you see these days. But
yeah, it's unthinkable.
But I did have that outdoor experience. I only remember going on one hike as a kid. I met a couple guys who were from Germany and touring the United States on one of my bike trips, and got home and told my mom I was going to take these guys up to Mount Rainier. And we went up to Mount Rainier and did a short little hike up there. But that's the only hike I can remember from my youth. And went to a couple years of college at UW and then transferred out to the Midwest and University of Michigan, did no hiking there. And first job after college was in New York City. And I lived a pretty intensely urban life in New York for 11 years, rarely getting out of town. And I think probably the highest I ever got was the roof of my 4-story walk-up. And I loved it in New York, but eventually burned out on it and kind of went through a midlife crisis at 35, if you can do that. And decided that I needed to change some things in my life. And one of them was I needed to reconnect with the planet and start getting outside. I was thinking, you know, what was it about my childhood that I liked so much? And I kept just thinking about the forests and Mount Rainier always being there, and realized I'd become disconnected from the planet. And just up and left New York on pretty much no notice, and came back out here with the intention of getting outdoors and reconnecting with the mountains and the wild. And so I came back from New York and I jumped right into it.
So what was your first hike back then?
First hike back, you'll know this one. My first hike in Washington was a 3-day backpack up Sourdough Mountain.
Oh, yes.
The North Cascades. So I jumped into it with both feet. What is that? 5,000 feet up and 5 miles. And we got up to about a mile from the summit the first day and set up camp. And, you know, the sun set over that sea of icy peaks in the North Cascades, and I was hooked.
Oh, I bet. And that lake's just right below you there.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing going up the next day through those meadows, that last mile to the summit. And you know, I had never been that high above something and other than an airplane. And I can remember, you know, almost severe case of vertigo and afraid to look down. We'd go by a tree every once in a while. And I'd wrap one arm around the tree and kind of look over my other shoulder down at Lake Diablo, 3,500 feet below. And it was an intense experience.
Wow, that's great. Well, I have to admit, I've never actually been on the hike before, but I've seen pictures from up above, and it just looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it was, I remember thinking I wasn't in Brooklyn anymore.
Yeah, for sure. You know, funny story about that hike, I did go look at the trailhead one time, and man, it looks pretty intense even just from the start. But there was a note, it was in like, it was probably early April, a couple of years ago, and there was a note on there from a guy, handwritten from the summer before, and he had lost his backpack up there. I guess he got too tired. He said he left it in the meadows, and I just felt so bad for that guy. He left his phone number. I felt like calling him, you know, just saying, "Oh man, hope you found your backpack." But just kind of funny story there.
Yeah, it's a pretty intense hike. I had gotten up about 3 miles and noticed a gum wrapper on the trail and just leaned, you know, bent over to pick it up. And when I stood back up, everything just went white. And,
man,
you know, I just not used to that altitude and the thin air. And but it was pretty incredible. And I was hooked from day one.
And what year was that about?
That was probably 1992, I believe.
So you probably had a considerable amount of weight on your back then, huh?
Yeah, old external frame backpack.
Yeah.
You know, that I had, there was, now it's not a happy story, but I was with a couple friends and they were going to visit a house that where the homeowner had died of AIDS. And apparently they were trying to get rid of stuff out of the house. And I was just along for the ride. And we went in the house and there was this external frame backpacks sitting there. And the guy was like, "Do you know anybody who wants this?" And I said, "I'll take it." And it was an old-fashioned thing, and it served as my pack for probably 5 years or so. You know, the equipment's gotten a lot better since then, but I'm still using a lot of my original gear. I have a REI half dome I still camp in. It's never failed me. Had a old bulky Coleman stove that I used for the longest time until finally deciding I could get something lighter a few years ago. But the equipment's gotten a lot lighter since then.
What kind of stove do you have now?
I have the Pocket Rocket.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to admit, I like it. I swore I would never go away from my Coleman stove because even though it weighed a few pounds or so, it seemed, there were so many times we went out where my friends had whisper lights or something and they couldn't get them going. And I'd say, "Okay, let me go get my stove." And I'd bring out the old Coleman and it would fire up. So I was kind of attached to it. But,
well, those guys were probably making fun of you about even carrying it up there to begin with.
They did. And, you know, I had a name for my stove, which is probably not appropriate for your podcast. I did rubbed it in a little bit. So, you know, but finally when it died a few years ago, I thought one of my friends had shown me a pocket rocket and that seemed pretty light and easy to use. So I, you know, I let go of my old ways.
Well, you know, pocket rocket could almost be not appropriate for the show too in certain
I've gotten a few jokes about that.
Yeah, I'm sure. So what about since we're talking about the camping and stuff, what about your sleeping bag and pad? What do you use for that then?
Oh, I've still got a Therm-a-Rest and for a pad, and I've gotten to the point where I take two of them up, just to make it a little easier on my back. And yeah, I probably have a Sierra Design sleeping bag. But I'm not much of a gear junkie, so I know a lot of my friends are into the latest stuff and they know all the names and things like that. I got a sleeping bag and a tent and a pad.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's one of the reasons why I think the show is kind of cool is because it shows all the different aspects of hiking. So, I mean, that's awesome. You know, it's good for people to hear because I think some people think, oh man, I got to go out and get the newest, greatest, lightest thing. And that's not always true.
Yeah, I've done a couple things. I went out and got a one person lightweight tent, just because at my age you're looking to cut all the weight you can. But by and large, I'm still using a lot of stuff that I got when I first started out, and just haven't really felt the need to have the latest and greatest. So I wouldn't, if someone was starting out now, I wouldn't recommend carrying up my gear, but
We shouldn't have to, yeah.
yeah.
Well, and some of the stuff you're talking about, if you purchase it in the 90s, it's gonna hold out. I mean, we talked about this in a few podcasts that, you know, a lot of gear that you buy nowadays, if you're buying cheap or buying, you know, for the less expensive, not necessarily cheap, but it might end up cheap, you know, it might not last, but you know, you spend a little bit of money and sometimes you're gonna get that stuff that lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of getting something good, because you just get it's so cheap when you amortize the costs over the years. And so when people talk to me about snowshoes or poles or something, I'm generally recommending the higher end products, just because it may be expensive now, but if you only have to buy it once every 20 years, it's really not that much.
Yeah, that's a win. So you went on that backpacking trip on Sourdough Mountain. What's your favorite backpacking trip? Yeah, could you possibly have one?
Well, I was thinking about this today, and it's kind of like choosing your favorite child, but I don't think anything is better than the Enchantments. I've been up there three times, and I think I found places I'm just as happy to go to, but I don't think anything's better than that.
Yeah.
So I'm probably just adding my vote to the overall winner, but it's a pretty incredible place. I did Snowgrass Flats this last year in the Goat Rocks, and really was impressed by that. I've done the Mormon Lady Lakes. That was one of my more favorite backpacks. And
Just because of the name or the terrain?
Just the terrain.
Yeah.
Just a lot of little lakes and meadows, and I went up in the fall, and it was ablaze with color. And
Wow, yeah, that's cool.
I've kind of gotten away from the backpacking over the years, and mostly day hike now, but I still try and get out on two or three a year.
That's cool. Are you gonna meet up with any of the Washington hikers and climbers that are attempting the Pacific Crest Trail this year?
Well, I hope to meet Hadley on the trail. I probably shouldn't talk about that too much. You might want to edit that out. I think that's supposed to be a secret. But also the other day, the administrator of that Croatian hiking page contacted me and said one of his members was going to come out and do the PCT this year.
I noticed that. That's cool.
Yeah, and asked if I could give him any helpful pointers. So I friended the guy on Facebook, and we've been communicating a bit. And Hoping to take a group up when he's here in Washington and meet him on the trail, give him a little encouragement for the last few hundred miles.
I think there's a few. Hadley mentioned that he met up with a few people from the group. So there's actually maybe even a couple more. Is that true?
It does appear that way. Hadley was the only one from our group that I know of. But when I posted about the Croatian hiker coming up and saying maybe he could meet up with Hadley somewhere along the line, a few other people piped in and said, yeah, we're going too. Or somebody would mention a friend who was going. And
that's cool.
Yeah. So I think there's probably five or six from the group going up.
I'd say that out of the group, there's probably a good percentage that wish they had the time to do the whole trail, maybe, or at least attempt it. But, it runs right through our state. It's got to be. I've been working on the trying to get Washington done myself, and just etching at it. But so, what about day hikes? I mean, man, how about like a top five or something?
Well, in preparation for this, I actually pulled off my top 10 list.
Oh, nice.
From my computer, which strangely enough has 15 hikes on it. because I just That's can't, good. I just can't narrow it down to 10.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's a good list, So, my favorite day hikes I've got down here, Sahali Arm, Hidden Lake up in your neighborhood. Gothic Basin, the Mount Baker Railroad grade, and the Deming Glacier. That's one hike there. Rampart Ridge above Snoqualmie Pass, Ingalls Lake, Maple Pass Loop, another one up in your area, Vesper Peak on the Mountain Loop Highway. Winchester Mountain, another one up in your area. You seem to live in the right place. I like Earl Peak in the Tianaways, one I kind of discovered by accident. Katy Ridge in eastern Washington to Lake Sally Ann on the Pacific Crest Trail. Spider Meadow and Little Giant Pass, both in the Chihuahua River Valley. The Kendall Catwalk and Snowgrass Flats. That's 15.
Wow. Those are good. But, it's funny because some of my shows here, I'm just kind of astounded that a lot of hikes up north that are really, you had a lot up the Mountain Loop and Highway 20 and Mount Baker. There's some good hiking up there.
No, you can't beat it. Of those 15, the one that kind of has is a personal favorite of mine is Rampart Ridge up above Rachel Lake and the Rampart Lakes Basin. I don't know why it's become a personal favorite, but it's I just like the way the hike unfolds. I go in the long way. A lot of my friends do the backdoor entry, but I'm kind of partial to going slow and taking my time and watching it slowly get better and better. It's the same with the Enchantments. Pretty much everybody these days wants to go up to Kolchak and hit Asgard Pass and be right up there. And, I always remembered when I first came back from New York, I bought all the Mountaineers books by Ira Spring and Harvey Manning and read those books cover to cover. And I don't know whether it was Harvey or Ira always talked about the Kolchak Asgard entrance to the Enchantments and said, why eat your dessert before dinner?
Nice.
I've always done the long way, the long slog through Snow Lake and, where you just, it just keeps getting better and better. You hit Snow Lake, then up to the lower Enchantments, and then the upper Enchantments, and finally Asgard. And I feel the same way about Rampart Ridge. I like going in the long way through Rachel Lake and up through the Rampart Lakes Basin, and then getting up on top of that ridge. And it's the view up there always knocks my socks off, and it's my happy place.
My understanding is a lot of people do Asgard because they don't get the right passes. Is that true, or do some of the people who get the right passes just get in there quick and try to stay?
I think most people like the Asgard entrance just because it's shorter and it gets you into the meat of the hike quicker. You know, you go Snow Lake, it's 7.5 miles, 4,000 feet just to get to snow. And, you know, then you got another couple miles and another 2,000 feet to get up to into the enchantments. And I don't think people have the patience for that.
Right. Yeah, I had this guy hit me up on my Facebook page, and he was like, "Hey, I'm coming in from New York and going to be hiking up to Sahali and staying the night. You know, you have any suggestions of how I can get there?" And then, and I said, "Well, have you applied for a permit? You know, I'm sorry, you can't apply for a permit that early for there, but I said, do you understand how the permits work? You know, you have to get there a day early, get your permit." And I said, "No." And I said, "Well, what's your plan?" He said, "Well, I plan on doing the enchantments first and then that." And I said, "Well, wait a minute now. There's a whole nother permit system there." And that just got horrible this year. I mean, in it probably a good way, I would say, but it got a lot harder, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting on my enchantment permits, so we'll see. I'm 3 for 3 in the past. We'll see if I can get gold one more time.
What month did you shoot for?
Well, I shot for October. I've never been up when the larch have turned. I've either been up around July 4th or around Labor Day. And yeah, I've been up enough. I don't feel I need to go up there. I always shied away from October because the weather's a little iffier. But I just figured, well, I'll take a chance, you know. And if it all works out, great. And if it doesn't, I'll rely on my memories. So I shot for mid-October, and, you know, we'll see what the weather's like then.
Well, if not, I'll see you on one of the other large trails.
Yeah. There's a few others. I hit Ingalls last year and Maple Pass Loop, and they were both spectacular.
I couldn't believe Maple Pass Loop this year. It was my first time going up there. I couldn't believe it. I'd never been up there before. I was like, this is amazing. During right when the larches were starting to turn. It was great.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I mean, if anybody has not seen larches before like that, it's just something else.
Yeah, for an easy hike, it's hard to beat.
Yeah. Well, have you ever done Blue Lake right there?
I have not done Blue Lake.
Yeah, it's so short. It's worth the trip. The mileage on it, I think, includes the loop around the lake. So mm-hmm. It's only about 3/4 mile to the lake.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. It's well worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen the pictures and the larches there. It's fantastic.
I'm sure you have on the group there. So,
yeah. You know, there's so many hikes in Washington. Just by way of example, I bought the, Mountaineer's 100 Classic Hikes of Washington book. And when it first came out, and I always knew I'd never make all 100 of them, but I just wanted to make 50 of them. And I've been hiking for almost 25 years in Washington. I finally hit my 50th one last year. So
oh, that's cool.
It's just, you know, I'll die with half of them undone, and just so much to see out here.
That's great. Well, the 50 is a good accomplishment for sure. So this hiking we've been talking about, has there been a scariest moment on the trail?
My scariest moment did not happen in Washington. When I was just starting out hiking, about 6 of us took the train to Glacier National Park, and we kind of did a cross the park hike. Starting at Lake McDonald and ending at Mary Lake, I think it is. And, you know, I was pretty new to it and didn't really understand what might be involved. And it was hot. It was summer. I didn't think there was going to be any problem. And I sort of brushed over the little warning at the bottom of our permit that said you should probably have an ice axe for one little stretch across over Gunsight Pass. And, you know, didn't. So we got up there. I forget where we stayed the first night, near one of the chalets, maybe Sperry Chalet or something. And the next day went over Gunsight Pass, no problem, no snow. Was heading down to Gunsight Lake, and we came up to just a little snowfield. Wasn't, you know, by standards of what I'm used to now, it was a puny little thing. It couldn't have been more than maybe 30 yards wide and maybe 100 feet above us and 100 or 100 feet below, but it just kind of ran out onto this short little ledge, you know, maybe 10 feet wide. And then it was a sheer drop off as far as I could tell. And we were kind of looking at it thinking, you know, this doesn't look real good, you know, but to go around it was going to be so much effort. And stupidly, I just thought, oh, this can't be that hard, you know? So started out across this little snowfield and got about 2/3 of the way across, and my lower foot gave out, you know, slipped out on the snow, and I went down to one knee. I had we had backpacks on with 6 days worth of gear, 6 days worth of food, and 6 days worth of alcohol. And they were not light backpacks, and I slipped down to one knee, and one of my feet was kind of trying to slide down the snowfield. And all I could think of was that, you know, little 10 feet of gravel at the bottom of the snowfield between me and the cliff. And I kind of stopped and stood there or kneeled there and tried to compose myself, and you know, finally mustered up the strength to stand up and get on 2 feet again. And at that point just ran the last 10 yards across the snowfield. But, that was, you know, I learned a lesson that day. And, but that was probably the most scared I've ever been. The only other thing I can think of, a couple years ago, we were going up to Kolchak in November. It was the year when there wasn't any snow for the longest time. And we were going up to Kolchak, and it was cold that day. There wasn't any snow on the trail, but have you been up to Kolchak?
I haven't. Well, actually, I take that back. I think I did when I was like 4 years old.
Yeah, there are these granite ledges that kind of overhang the valley. As you make your way up to Kolchak, you can go out and step on them, and they're a good place to take pictures. And so we were almost up to the lake, and I went out onto one of those, and I was kind of eyeing the edge of the it's a sheer drop off. So you don't want to get too close to the ledge. And I was thinking, you know, I don't want to go over there, I don't think. And right when that thought went through my mind, the next thing I knew, I was airborne and just landed with a thud on the granite and started slipping a little bit and stopped.
Wow.
And, you know, it was when I was able to get off the sheet of ice that I had stepped onto, and saw what had happened. It was just a beautiful sunny day, but it was cold, and there was a sheet of ice on that slab, and it led to the cliff. And I just remember thinking as I was in the air, you know, this is how it happens. You know, everything's cool 1 minute, and then it isn't. So those are my two little episodes on the trail.
Yeah, those both sound really scary. I can relate. What about a funny moment on the trail? I'm sure probably both of those, but besides those.
I've got some funny moments, but they probably can't be shared on the podcast. I did one hike up to Rampart Ridge where I remember coming back with about five funny stories. I guess the couple I can tell, I have a friend, David Wary, who, Twitter friend of mine, who may be moving out here soon. I want to give him a shout out. Hope his mom's doing okay. But he's sort of the he's an awesome hiker, and we were going up to Rampart Ridge, and he told me about this 4-day solo backpacking trip he had gone on, where you know, he was out in the wilderness, hadn't seen anybody for a couple days, and he had a box of raisins with him, and was laying down in his tent one night with the box of raisins next to him, and starting to think that that woman on the raisin box looked pretty good.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, I call him the raisin boy now, and there's been sort of a running 1-year joke on Facebook and Twitter about the raisin girl and who she loves.
I'm gonna have to go look at a picture of the raisin box now. I kind of forgot.
Yeah. Well, if you ever check out our pages, you'll see references to her now and then. So
that's funny.
Yeah, and that was the same hike. One of my I have a hiking mentor, a guy who taught me a lot of what I know about hikes in Washington, and who I hiked with for many years. And he happened to be on that hike as well. And he told me the story about the time he ran up to Rampart Ridge to see his girlfriend up there, and but he couldn't stay long. Because, as he explained, I was married, you know.
Oh, so, no.
it was just one of those hikes where the stories were coming out pretty fast and furious. So, yeah, a lot of good times on the trail.
That's good. I like that. So what do you carry when you're out on a day hike? What's normally in your pack?
Oh, I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but I would say most of the 10 essentials.
Right.
It depends on how long a hike I'm going on. I know I'll probably get a lot of grief from this on the page, but, you know, I'm, like I mentioned, I'm getting old, and, it's a struggle to carry two pairs of clothing up there. And, it may cost me one day, but if that's the way I go out, so be it. But, you know, I got something to start a fire. I got a compass. I study my maps very well before I go out. You know, I usually know where I'm going. I'm probably not the perfect example of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, not everybody is, and that's the whole point. What about like food on a day hike? What do you typically just do, like a sandwich or?
Well, I've actually, this goes kind of counter to what I've just saying, but I've actually started enjoying taking a lot of time and getting my food ready. And, my latest thing has been, homemade guacamole and chips and, egg salad sandwiches for the morning. And I've tried a few different things. I went up to Blanca Lake a couple years ago with my stove and cooked some bacon wrapped scallops.
Wow.
And yeah, that was a little too much. Won't be doing that again. but yeah, and of course, I've got just a bunch of power bars and things that have been sitting in the bottom of the Camelback for probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, those are good to have though. I mean, yeah, why not?
So, but the guacamole and chips on the trail, that's a treat, you know, got a little bite to it. Not your traditional trail food.
No, it sounds good, though. I actually really like that idea.
We hiked up to the High Divide. And
oh, yeah.
I did that with a couple friends maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And one of my friends brought up these nice bagel sandwiches that he made on the trail and looked at me and he said, and I was saying, you know, this is good. Thanks a lot. And he said, you know, this really needs an onion. So I'm kind of a big believer in a little onion and just something to spice it up on the trail. I've eaten my share of trail mix and I like the fresh stuff.
I get that. Yeah, I like that. So what about backpacking? What type of food is that? Is that kind of what you're talking about? Do you kind of do the same stuff or?
Well, on a backpack, the first night in, we might take some, fresh food in. But after that, I've pretty much gotten into just buying the dehydrated stuff and, you know, throwing some hot water in that and eating that. For years, I hiked with my sister who had a food dehydrator. And boy, she made some incredible stuff for, you know, I remember lamb and lentil stew and over couscous. And
wow, that sounds good.
Yeah, some chili she made. And those were the best days. You know, when we went up to the Enchantments the last time, I had been eating at my favorite local restaurant, and they had this this farro dish that I really liked. And I kind of worked on the chef for about 6 months extracting that recipe from him because I knew it was going to make a good trail food. And so we took that up when we went to the Enchantments last time, but you know, once I get past that first night, I'm looking at your basic dehydrated prepackaged meals.
Yeah, that's the way I am. So basically you're saying once you get deep in the woods, you only use your pocket rocket then, huh?
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about the 10 essentials. What about your
By the way, I am totally, if anyone asked me, I would recommend that you have the 10 essentials. I've seen too many horror stories of people going on easy hikes and, you know, something goes wrong and they're out overnight and they don't have an emergency blanket or something like that. And, you got to have that stuff.
Well, you know what I would do if I was on a hike and I saw you, I would expect, there's Mr. Washington Hiker and Climber. He's got all the 10 essentials.
I'm afraid my reputation exceeds my real life.
So what about leave no trace?
I practice leave no trace pretty fastidiously. The only thing I can plead guilty to is occasionally going off trail. When I do, I try and walk on the rocks. And but again, I'm probably not perfect. But as far as pack it in, pack it out, you know, don't go stomping on the meadows. Don't pick the flowers. All of that I'm pretty good with.
Yeah, for sure. I can't imagine too many people picking the flowers up there, but I guess they probably do.
No, you still see it at the national parks, especially people who aren't used to the culture. You know, most hikers in Washington have at least heard of the principle. But in the national parks, you get people who rarely get outdoors. They may be from other countries and you'll see things you don't want to see, but
that's true. Yeah. Well, in any of the more populated spots, what about your clothes? Do you have a certain clothing you like to wear? I know when I first started hiking, it was all jeans and t-shirts.
Yeah, well, I went up to Kolchak once in a pair of jeans, and I swore that would never happen again. If you look at some of my old hiking pictures, you'll see me in jeans. But nowadays, my favorite outfit is a knee-high socks and a pair of shorts and some sort of maybe a biker shirt or something like that, short sleeve shirt. Of course, I have more stuff for the winter when we go out snowshoeing, but I have a long pair. I have a couple pair of longer hiking pants, loose fitting. But I love the shorts and the knee-high socks.
Nice. Well, definitely, we'll see you coming.
Yeah.
What about rain gear? What do you have for that?
During the summer, I have a rain shell, and during the winter, I have a thicker, Columbia sportswear jacket or something.
The rain shell, is that like a poncho?
No, it's it's like a fleece, except it's a rain shell instead of fabric. You know, I long sleeve, of course, but again, I'm not a gear junkie, so I couldn't even tell you who made it.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I was trying to grasp what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about
Yeah.
now. So what about trail work?
I embarrassingly have not done trail work.
But you've organized some stuff, right? You've helped kind of get some people out there picking up garbage or something.
Well,
Obviously, you had a part in that.
we've promoted it. We actually had a trip up to Blanca Lake planned last year for garbage pickup, and we got contacted by the Forest Service, and they asked us not to do it because we had too many people in the group. Yeah, and we told them we'd spread out, no more than 12 people in a group, a mile apart, just like the regulations, but they just didn't want us doing it. So. Yeah, I've thought about that. I feel kind of selfish for not having done the trail work, and not sure how much help I would be right now, but I'm certainly grateful for all the people who do that, and try to thank them profusely when I bump into them on the trail.
Well, sure. I would say your biggest asset right now would be your reach. You have a very influential I can't say the word. You have a very influential take on the group. Everybody listens to you. So
Well, we certainly post a lot on the group about the trail maintenance work that goes on out there.
yeah, I think I've seen some pictures where people have said, "Oh, look, here's some trail maintenance people I saw on the trail," and seems to get a lot of reactions, so that's good.
No, it's great work. I do a lot of volunteer work. It's just in other areas, and
Oh yeah, no, I don't mean you specifically.
just haven't done that, although I probably should.
Yeah, no, and not everybody can. That's the whole thing is. As long as you can get out and experience the trails, it's what you should be doing. I think that's
Sure.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it'd be good.
I ran into a group from WTA a couple years ago, and just they had their packs off, and I just asked to see how heavy one of their packs was because they had one of those
Yeah.
Pulaskis in it, and God, I could barely lift that thing off the ground. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy. So they were packing them in.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did that one time up to the PCT up the North Fork Sauk one time, and yeah, that's a long haul with the extra weight. That's for
Yep.
sure.
Yep.
Do you photograph on the trail with a big camera, or do you use your phone?
I use my phone and a little $100 Nikon point and shoot.
Cool.
And it's funny because usually when I get into something, and I'm definitely into taking pictures on the trail, I get sort of OCD about it and need to have the best gear and all the best stuff. But for some reason, with the photography, I've managed to avoid that, and I have a couple very simple cameras, and I like the fact that they're lightweight and easy to use. I can just the point and shoot, I can just pull in and out of my pocket, and they've done well enough for me. But I look at some of the people who have the nice cameras, and there's no doubt their pictures are better. Yeah, there's some pretty incredible photographers on that page.
Yeah, for sure. What about dogs? Do you have a dog?
I do not have a dog. I have a lot of friends who hike with their dogs, who have dogs and who hike with them, and I've hiked with them, but no, I do not have a dog.
It's a lot of responsibility.
One of 27 people in Washington who doesn't.
Well, I'm with you. I'm not. I don't dislike dogs. I just don't have. It's another responsibility.
Yeah, I've got a kid. I don't need a dog.
Yeah, for sure. He'd probably tell you the same thing. He wants all the attention.
Yeah, well, he doesn't, he's old enough, he doesn't want any now, but
Yeah. Well, when he needs you. Yeah.
yeah.
It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to cascadehikerpodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. What piece of gear do you consider not replaceable? Or maybe there's a piece of gear that people say, I can't believe you keep bringing that up here on the trail.
Trekking poles.
That's interesting. That because people think you're weird for carrying them, or because you can't replace them.
Well, people don't think I'm weird for carrying them, but I took that question as what's the one essential piece of gear, and
Right, yeah.
I've been through the team trekking poles versus team ice axe wars on Twitter a couple years ago, and so I'm partial to my trekking poles.
Nice. Yeah, I agree. Once the first time I ever used them, I was done. That was it. I keep them we call it four-wheel drive. Do you ever take alcohol hiking or marijuana?
I've taken alcohol hiking. I'm kind of past the days of marijuana, so
Yeah, well, it's not an issue of one or the other, but
no. Yeah, I've taken alcohol hiking. When we backpack, we take up 151 rum to,
more bang for
yeah,
the
conserve on the weight. And actually, if you were to ask me what's the most valuable thing I've ever learned hiking, I would probably tell you it's hang the bear rope before you start drinking.
That's good. Okay, I can only imagine that story.
Yeah. Well, the day I figured that out, it was an epiphany. And I remember running to the phone when I got home to call my sister and tell her what I had figured out. Because I've tumbled down more than one mountain trying to hang the bear wire after.
Oh, no. I had a buddy that they took stakes up to Forgotten Meadows, on Mount Forgotten there on the other side of Dickerman, up the Mount Loop, and they packed in these steaks and beer, like, not, just cans of Bud Light. And they humped up that hill, and they put the there was still some snow in the meadows there, and they put the steaks and the beer in the snow, and of course they didn't hang them, but their buddy's dog ate all the steak. So a lot of times you're not hanging it just for the bears, but yeah.
Yeah.
All right, do you filter all your water on the trail?
I boil my water. More old-fashioned, technology.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that before. You know, you got to plan ahead, right? Because you can't, you know, it's hard to drink that boiling water if you're really thirsty.
Yeah. no, we'll usually do it the night before, the morning of. But when I'm out backpacking, I'm usually not all my friends are so Neanderthal, and somebody will usually have a filter, and so I'll ask to borrow it. So, but I've always generally boiled my water, and I went through that period too where I used iodine tablets. So,
oh yeah, yeah, that tastes good, huh?
Well, then they had these other tablets that you would put in to remove the iodine taste. So, yeah, that's about as high tech as I went with that.
Wow, are you a chemist?
No, my parents were though, but maybe that's where I got that from.
I think so. Do you carry bear spray or a firearm or some type of deterrent?
I carry bear spray in Montana, and when I hike there, and I would carry it in Alaska and probably in BC, but I do not carry bear spray in Washington. I've seen dozens of black bears and never had a problem with them, despite literally almost running into one on the trail. And black bears don't concern me.
No,
they'll probably get attacked by one this summer now, but they just, you know, I hope she's not listening, but I have a friend who carries bear spray up Mailbox Peak, and I'm always giving her grief for that.
I'm sure she's really nice. She is. So the next question would be trekking poles, but we already covered that. Do you know what kind you carry?
Black Diamond. See, that shows you how much I love my trekking poles. I know the brand of trekking poles I have.
Yeah, for sure.
Black Diamond trekking poles, cork handle. You can't beat it.
Mm-hmm. Good. What type of socks and footwear do you hike in?
Nice socks. Yeah, those are, I have an assortment of Smartwool and REI and a couple other brands, but, yeah, when you asked me to limit it to just one piece of gear, I was having trouble deciding between socks and my trekking poles. Cause I'm not very materialistic. I don't need much, but, I need my soft socks.
Nice. So some type of smart wool type sock.
Yeah.
Okay. What about your footwear? Are you a boot guy or?
No, I'm definitely a boot guy. I couldn't tell you what I'm wearing right now.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah. It's, but I wear boots. Yep.
Cool. Boots with long socks. I'm going to recognize you for that rather than your face.
I have a couple different pairs of boots, lightweight, medium weight, heavyweight. So.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Do you have a hiking book that you refer to people? Not necessarily a guidebook, but more like a book about hiking, like fiction, nonfiction, something.
Well, the book that got me out of New York was Peter Matheson's The Snow Leopard.
Really?
Yeah, a book about Matheson when he went to the Himalayas to in search of the elusive snow leopard, and about the time his wife was dying of cancer, I believe. And I remember reading that book. I knew I had to get out of New York, and I read that book, and I read one passage where he was just about to get on the plane to go to the Himalayas. And, you know, I closed that book and I said, I'm out of here.
Wow.
So that's my hiking book recommendation. Not really about hiking, but, it's what sealed the deal for me.
That's pretty intense. Wow. If you could choose one person to hike with, dead, alive, famous, not, Who would you choose and why?
Can I choose two?
Yep.
Lewis and Clark.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Always been fascinated by the Lewis and Clark expedition. I think it was the greatest hike in American history, even though it was not all on foot. I'd like to hike with those guys and see what they were about.
That's really cool. So have you read any books about them then also?
Oh yeah. I went through my Lewis and Clark stage and one on the 200th anniversary of their expedition, my son and I went out to central Montana and followed the trail all the way back to Washington and stopped by a lot of reenactments and famous spots on the trail and done quite a bit of reading about them.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome, awesome expedition.
Oh, man. Man, that's a really cool answer. I would have never expected that. Yeah. Okay, last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I have listened to your podcast, and I've also listened to In Ice Hacks We Trust, which is run by a couple of my Twitter friends. So,
nice. Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah, I don't know if they're doing it anymore still, but that was my introduction to outdoor podcasts.
Well, cool. Hey, well, thanks for checking out my show.
you better believe it. And I'll certainly be checking this out to see how it turned out.
I guarantee it sounds great.
Yeah. But I understand you're going to be doing one with Craig Romano. Is that correct?
He mentioned that that he wants to, he wouldn't mind coming on the show. So yeah, it'd be fun.
Well, I don't belong in the same breath as him. So that's, that'll be pretty impressive if you get him.
Well, I hope so. You know, I the thing is I just kind of want to see where this goes and see what people can learn from it and get inspired by it. So,
yeah, well, you're doing a good job with it. And I listened to the one with Hadley and it was great, and you know, hope it takes off.
Well, for nothing else, at least you're in the company with Hadley and not Craig Romano.
Well, I listened to one other one too. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on her name.
Yeah, Shannon Cunningham.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's right, and that was good too. Yeah, it's really interesting to, you know, hear the perspectives of these people who. I know we all share the same love of the outdoors, but, you know, everyone's coming at it from a different way. So,
for sure. Oh, that's good. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Okay. Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Don't forget to go back to iTunes and rate the show. It helps out. Helps people find the podcast. Like Rodlene G. She says, ... Inspiring and interesting. Love to hear about hiking ideas. Can't wait for more podcast episodes. Thanks, Rodlene G, for the 5-star rating. Leave your own rating, and I'll read it on the show. Thanks a lot. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and you know, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode, and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CascadeCapitalHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. I come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong. It could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find you.